you don't know what she's talking about, then it's time for Faith Finds Out. Ooh, you don't know, but you're gonna find out.
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Faith Finds Out. This is your host, Faith Signs. I am really excited to wrap up our series on the Enneagram today. I don't want to take up any time up top, honestly. I had a good week, hope you had a good week. Black lives still matter, my car's still broken, but I just genuinely want to jump right in because I know I'm going to need a lot of time for this last part. Obviously, I want to go through Enneagram numbers 7, 8, and 9 and finish up doing those. And then I wanted to obviously take some time to share all my references, which I probably should have done at the end of each part. And the next time I do a multiple part series, I will do that because I realized as I was thinking about it last night, you know, if somebody just listens to the first episode or just listens to part two, then, you know, they wouldn't have these references and that's kind of crappy of me. So I want to make sure I'm giving fair credit all the time, but definitely I'll do that this time around. And then I also thought it would be fun, you guys. A big part of what helped me to really familiarize myself with the Enneagram and just really learn it over time was following several meme accounts. Like, there's a ton of Enneagram related meme accounts on Instagram, and it's really funny the way that they joke about all the different types. It does, though, just really help you understand them. I'll also tag all the accounts I mentioned today on my final Enneagram post on my Instagram at Faith Finds Out Podcast, so make sure you follow me there. Quick plug to also please subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. Please rate 5 stars in review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. That really helps me out. I've been having so much fun doing this, you guys, and I've been so grateful for the awesome support. And I've had so many random people reach out and tell me that they're enjoying the podcast, and that just makes me so warm and fuzzy inside. I just can't get over that. I think it's incredible, and I'm really happy. But, you know, obviously, I want to be able to keep doing this, and I want the podcast to grow. So I hate asking people to do stuff like that. I am the worst salesperson ever. I would sooner be homeless than go into sales because I'm like, if you want to follow me, like, that'd be okay. Like, I'm so bad at this. It's always the most uncomfortable part of me recording, but here I am asking. But guys, no break today. No break from me, no fun fade in and out, nothing like that, because we gotta get rocking and rolling, guys. We got a lot to talk about today. Hey guys, psych, we are gonna take a quick break. This is Editing Faith. You don't get to hear from me a lot. I'm the brains behind the operation, right? Other Faith, Recording Faith, she's just the talent, and she messes up quite a lot. So I wanted to just take a beat and say a couple quick things. Number one, there is a mystery sound in the background of most of this recording, and I don't exactly know what it is, but I will find out, and I will not allow it to happen again. See, with the big fancy podcasts, there's a producer always listening, and if there's a weird background noise, they stop everyone and figure it out and solve it. Otherwise, like, you can't really hear that it's happening. It's a whole thing. Anyway, I don't know what it is, and I hope it's not too distracting because I do think that this is a great episode and I want you guys to have fun with it. So I wanted to say that. And then also, I don't know what I was thinking, you guys, but I forgot the fun fact this week. Just totally forgot it. And I'm sure that that would probably be fine, and a lot of you probably wouldn't even have noticed, but I find it unacceptable. There must be a fun fact. So I have one here. Editing Faith is going to share a little fun fact for you. So get this, I found this one fascinating. We are born with only 2 natural fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud sounds. Those are the only 2 natural fears that you're born with. All other fears and phobias are learned or acquired later in life. Really fascinating. I wonder what it is about just those 2 things, right? Like, you would think that naturally you're afraid of, like, you know, getting eaten by a bear, but whatever. Falling and loud noises, that's cool. So something about the brain, probably. I don't know. If you're a scientist or whatever, email me.
you probably won't. Honestly, scientists aren't listening to this. So that's all for me, editing Faith. I just wanted to say sorry again about the noise. I don't know what it is, but it will not happen again. And secondly, I hope you enjoyed that fun fact. Back to your regularly scheduled podcasting time.
Let's go ahead and hop into talking about Enneagram 7s. I have a confession about the 7s, you guys. This is really true. This is my honest confession slash general apology to all the 7s of the world. I know the least about the type 7, and I will also say they just really confuse me. Like, I honestly don't understand them, and it's like, it's honestly, I think part of it for me is because I'm so introverted, and I think sometimes people, and when I say people, I mean me, I just don't want you to hate me, so I'm gonna say people. I think sometimes people tend to subconsciously associate intelligence with, like, being a person of fewer words, which is not at all real or true, right? Because sevens are in the thinking center. A lot of sevens are super, super, super intelligent and really deep thinkers, but sevens are so wild, and I think it just confuses me. Like, that combination of things, I think, has just always confused me, which is so, like, dumb and also rude, but that's why I'm apologizing. So this is my love letter to sevens. I'm going to tell you all about sevens, and then I'm going to tell them how great they are so that they forgive me, because I don't know that I know any sevens, or I think I've met sevens. I know I've met sevens, but I don't think I've ever gotten close to a seven. And maybe that's me being judgmental, or I don't know, if you're my friend and you identify as a seven, or you've gotten seven on the quiz, let me know, because maybe I am friends with sevens and I just don't know. But anyway, here we are, launching into the Enneagram 7. The 7 is called the Enthusiast. So 7s are busy. They are very variety-seeking. They are spontaneous and versatile, and they tend to be scattered as well. They're very extroverted and optimistic and, playful, high-spirited, but they are practical, and they can also misapply their many talents. They become overextended, very scattered, and often undisciplined. They constantly seek new and exciting experiences. So they are the epitome of the kind of person that's like, oh my God, it would be so fun if we started this business. And then, like, 2 weeks in, they get bored and they're like, oh my God, it'd be so fun if we started this other different business. Like, they can just be a little all over the place because they live so in the moment, which again, like, I have to say it again, all of these qualities are both great and not so great, depending on the person and the mood and the situation and the health of the person and just all of those things. But they can be distracted and just really exhausted because they're always on the go. They never settle. They never settle down, I should say. They typically have problems with impatience and impulsivity. Impulsivity? Impulsiveness? Impulsiveness. Oh, crap, guys. I don't know which one it is, and I have a feeling that everyone else does. Anyway, at their best, they focus their talents on worthwhile goals. They become appreciative and joyous and ultimately satisfied. That's the mark of a healthy seven, because that's hard for them to be and to maintain, is a feeling of satisfaction. So their basic fear is of being deprived and in pain. They're joy seekers through and through. So their basic desire is to be satisfied and content and to have their needs fulfilled. Sevens obviously have either a 6 wing or an 8 wing. And their key motivation is to maintain their freedom and happiness, to avoid missing out on worthwhile experiences, to keep themselves excited and occupied, and to avoid pain. So when a seven is disintegrating or in stress, scattered sevens become perfectionistic and critical, like a one can be. But when they're healthy, you know, when they're moving towards integration, a gluttonous, scattered seven can become more focused and fascinated by life. like healthy fives. Da, 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 da. So some cool examples of the seven. Let's talk about the Dalai Lama. He's a seven. Thomas Jefferson likely was. Benjamin Franklin, who was a jerk, who had syphilis. Amelia Earhart. Amelia Earhart is a cool concept for a seven, for sure, because she was such an adventure seeker, which I think is a really great call out about sevens. Joe Biden is a seven. Sarah Palin, those two names together, that's fun. Elton John, Mick Jagger, Miley Cyrus, Britney Spears, Katy Perry, Russell Brand. Some great examples of seven in literature would be Sirius Black and Fred and George Weasley. Real big seven energy coming off the Weasley twins, guys. So if you're Potter fans, then you need no more explanation. Oh, the perfect example of a seven would be Peter Pan, right? Running away from responsibility, constantly seeking new adventure, refusing to grow up. I say this lovingly, love you sevens, love you forever, but like, let's face it. The seven is named the enthusiast because sevens are very enthusiastic about almost everything that catches their attention. They approach life with curiosity, optimism, and a sense of adventure, like kids in a candy store, so to speak. So they look at the world in wide-eyed anticipation of all the good things that they are about to experience, which is a mindset that I would not mind having more of myself. Like, it's great to be able to keep positive and excited and engaged in the world around you. That's like a really, really incredible thing, right? They are bold and vivacious. They pursue what they want in life with a cheerful determination. Sevens are in the thinking center, which again is a weird contrast for me, but it kind of shows my bias towards people being like in the thinking center as being more like serious and broody, like sixes and fives. But like sevens are just as much in the thinking center as we are, right? It's just so different in the way they express it. So, you know, they are in the thinking center, but this is not necessarily immediately apparent because they tend to be extremely practical and engaged in a multitude of projects at any given time. Their thinking is anticipatory, which is one of my favorite words on the planet, anticipatory. They foresee events and generate ideas on the fly, right? So they're very quick thinkers. They favor activities that stimulate their minds, which in turn generates more things to do and think about. Sevens are not necessarily intellectual or studious by any standard definition, but they are often very intelligent and can be widely read and highly verbal. Pretty much what I said, only much, much more eloquent because it's a quote from an article and not my own weird brain. So their minds move rapidly from one idea to the next, making sevens gifted at brainstorming and synthesizing information. Sevens are exhilarated by the rush of ideas and the pleasure of being spontaneous, preferring broad overviews and the excitement of the initial stage of the creative process to probing a single topic in depth. So again, they're the big idea people. I actually worked for a seven. His name was Mark, and he owned his own business when I was in, it was in the Denver area. And listen, I'm no bad vibes towards this guy. Like, he's way cool. It was a fun, cool business to be a part of. But, you know, it was hard because he was so big picture that there was so much administrative stuff that was really lacking. And as a five, that was really, really challenging for me to, like, be on board with, right? And, you know, lack of planning does lead to a lot of struggles for sevens, right? Like, that isn't a way to necessarily always successfully live, just like hiding in my cave and reading articles is not a healthy way for me to live long term either as a five, right? Sevens are frequently endowed with a quick, agile mind and can be exceptionally fast learners. This is true both about their ability to absorb information, like language, facts, procedures, and their ability to learn new manual skills. Ironically, sevens' wide-ranging curiosity and ability to learn quickly also creates problems for them. Because they are able to pick up many different skills with relative ease, it becomes more difficult for them to decide what to do themselves, right? So as a result, they don't always value their abilities as they would if they had to struggle to gain them. When sevens are more balanced, however, their versatility, curiosity, and ability to learn can lead them to really extraordinary achievement. The root of their problem is common to all types of the thinking center. They are out of touch with their inner guidance, right? As with fives and sixes, this creates a deep anxiety in sevens. They do not feel that they know what to do or how to make choices that will be beneficial to themselves or others. Sevens cope with this anxiety in two ways. First, they try to keep their mind busy at all times. As long as sevens keep their minds occupied, especially with projects and positive ideas for the future, they can, to some extent, keep anxiety and negative feelings out of conscious awareness. Likewise, since their thinking is stimulated by activity, sevens are compelled to stay on the go, moving from one experience to the next, searching for more stimulation. This is not to say that sevens are spinning their wheels. They generally do enjoy being practical and getting things done. But secondly, sevens cope with loss of their inner guidance by using the trial and error method. They try everything to make sure that they know what is best. On a very deep level, sevens don't feel like they can find what they really want out of life. They therefore tend to try everything, and ultimately may even resort to anything as a substitute for what they're really looking for. If I can't have what really satisfies me, I'll enjoy myself anyway. That kind of mindset. So, you know, we'll see this in action in different trivial areas of their daily lives, right? So for example, if a seven goes to an ice cream shop and can't decide if he wants vanilla chocolate or strawberry ice cream, he'll just get all three and maybe even a couple more just to try them. That's the sort of idea behind sevens and how they tend to avoid their self-doubt or thinking about their self-doubt. Sevens speed up their pursuit of whatever seems to offer freedom and satisfaction. They tend to make worse choices, and they are less able to be satisfied because everything is experienced indirectly through the dense filter of their fast-paced mental activity. The result is that sevens end up really anxious, frustrated, and enraged with fewer resources available to them physically, emotionally, or financially. They may end up ruining their health, their relationships, their finances, all in search for this happiness that they're constantly chasing. On the positive side, however, sevens are extremely optimistic people. They're exuberant and upbeat. They are endowed with abundant variety and a desire to fully participate in their lives each day. They're fully present in their lives all the time in a way that I wish I could be, straight up. So they're naturally cheerful, they're good-humored, they don't take themselves too seriously, or really anything else that seriously. So, you know, they just want to be satisfied, happy, fulfilled, and you know, they, when they're balanced with themselves, they have a joy and an enthusiasm that they don't have to constantly chase. So, you know, they remind us of the pleasure of existence, and that's a really cool thing. Let's talk a little bit about the childhood wound of a seven. So the childhood wound for a seven is the absence of nurturing. In childhood, sevens felt disconnected from the nurturing figure in their home. For whatever reason, whether it was abuse or simple misunderstandings, the seven felt that they couldn't count on getting the nurturance they needed, or on a consistent, dependable level, at least. In order to deal with this, sevens learned to focus on transitional objects, or toys and activities that would feed the emptiness inside. They developed an unconscious message that they needed to nurture themselves because nobody else would do it adequately. Ooh, relatable. So they asked to seek out distractions, activities, possibilities, and objects that would excite their senses and keep them busy. Gaining whatever they thought would make them happy became symbolic of having the nurturing that they always felt like was just out of reach for them. So, dear sevens, I love you. I'm sorry that I have avoided you because your excitement levels scare me. You are wonderful, fun people. I hope I didn't offend anyone. I'm just being honest. I want to know more sevens. I want to learn about more sevens. I want to learn more about seven in general. And I don't want to be afraid of their upbeat nature. It just can be a little overwhelming to an introvert sometimes. It can come across a little stressful. But I love you, and I look forward to meeting you. Reach out to me if this sounds like you. Let's meet. Email me, faithfindsoutpodcast@gmail.com. Let's move on to the eights. Before I start talking about the eights, I would just like to say, eights, I love you. Please don't hurt me. I recognize your power. I mean no harm. You are the leader, and yeah, I hope I do a good job. Don't hate me. So talking about eights, eights are known as the challenger. Eights are powerful, dominating, self-confident, decisive, willful, and confrontational. Understatement of the century. But I really like that about eights, honestly. I'm just gonna get into it. I need to stop gushing and giving my opinion and just telling you guys facts, because that's what this podcast is. So eights are very confident, they're very strong and assertive, they're very protective of their loved ones. Eights are resourceful, straight-talking, super decisive, but they can be egocentric and they can be domineering. Eights feel like they must control their environment, especially people, sometimes becoming confrontational and intimidating. Eights typically have problems with their tempers and with allowing themselves to be vulnerable. At their best, though, they are self-mastering. They use their strength to improve others' lives, becoming heroic, magnanimous, and inspiring. Did I say magnanimous correctly? I think I did. Their basic fear is of being harmed or controlled by others, and their basic desire is to protect themselves and to be in control of their own life and destiny. I definitely know a few eights, and I love them. I think eights are great. I'm a five, though, so I don't find that frustrating. Like, if somebody just wants to be in charge, I don't think to myself, like, how frustrating, I want to be in charge. I think to myself, like, yeah, chill, like, you do whatever. I'm just gonna, like, replay an old episode of Friends in my head and not really listen to you because you seem a little crazy. And I don't really fight for it, which can be good, but most of the time, that's not good. Like, most of the time, action is needed. Eights never shy away from the actions needed. Their key motivation is to be self-reliant, to prove their strength and resist weakness, to be important in the world, to dominate their environment, and to stay in control of the situation. Obviously, their wings are sevens and nines. So when in disintegration or stress, self-confident eights suddenly become secretive and fearful, like a five. How dare you? How rude. However, when moving in the direction of integration, lustful, controlling eights become more open-hearted and caring, like healthy twos. So some good examples of eights in history and in life are Franklin D. Roosevelt, Winston Churchill. You know, again, a lot of leaders, because eights don't ever miss an opportunity to step up to the plate, just like these really brave leaders. Martin Luther King Jr., Lyndon Johnson, like it or not, Fidel Castro, let's see, Saddam Hussein. Sorry, eights, let me give you some cool ones. Ooh, I'm sorry about this, Donald Trump. But let's get excited, let's get excited. Pablo Picasso, Ernest Hemingway. Hemingway is such an eight, anyway, such an eight. Aretha Franklin, that's a good one. Courtney Love, Jack Black. Jack Black is a great example of an eight, actually. So in terms of some fictional characters, we have President Snow from The Hunger Games, Moody, Mad-Eye Moody from Harry Potter. The article that I pulled some of these fictional names from called him Alistair Moody, which I understand is his actual name, but everyone knows him as Mad-Eye Moody. Like, how could you put anything else? Like, it didn't even have Mad-Eye in, like, parentheses or quotation marks or, like, whatever you're supposed to do for nicknames. Like, I just think that's outrageous. Alistair Moody. Like, he goes by that ever. Anyway, not important. So those are some good examples of eights. So, you know, the eight is called the challenger because of all the types, eights enjoy taking on challenges themselves as well as giving others opportunities that challenge them to exceed themselves in some way. So they do bring other people up to their level in a really cool way. Eights are charismatic and have the physical and psychological capacities to persuade others to follow them into all kinds of endeavors, from starting a company to rebuilding a city, running a household, waging war, making peace. They can convince a lot of people to do all of the kinds of things that they want them to do out of sheer charisma. Eights have an enormous willpower and vitality, and they feel most alive when they are exercising these capacities in the world. They use their abundant energy to affect changes in their environment or to leave a mark, quote unquote. But, you know, at an early age, eights understand that this requires strength, will, persistence, and endurance, qualities that they develop in themselves and which they look for in other people. So eights don't want to be controlled in any way, or to allow others to have power over them, obviously, since that's their basic fear. Whether that power is psychological, sexual, social, financial, much of their behavior is involved with making sure that they retain and increase whatever power they have for as long as possible. An eight may be a general or a gardener, a small businessman, a mogul, the mother of a family, superior in religious organizations, or, you know, whatever the case may be. But no matter what, they are in charge. And being in charge and leaving their imprint on their sphere is one of their main motivations. So eights are true rugged individualists. They are, more than any other type, they stand alone. They want to be independent and resist being indebted to anyone. They often really refuse to give in to social convention, and they can defy fear, shame, and concern about the consequence of their actions. They are also very quick to go talk to a manager. You know what I'm saying? Like sometimes I will get my order and it's wrong, but I don't say something because, not because I'm non-confrontational, but just because, like, what I'm always weighing the worth of a situation. Like, I will be confrontational. This is just me talking about myself now, but I will be confrontational when I need to be. I don't shy away from it. However, I always ask myself, is this worth it? Like, is this really worth it? And sometimes it is, right? But if I just, like, asked for my dressing on the side, but instead it comes on my salad, like, is that worth the energy to go complain or leave a bad review or, like, whatever? Like, typically I'm like, no, it's just not worth it. Like, whatever. Like, just who cares? I've written a bad review for a company maybe one time in my life. I honestly can't remember, but I just don't want to say never if it's not true. But, like, I can't remember ever having done it because I don't care enough. Unless someone really, 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 really screws up. But eights are like, excuse me, I asked for it this way and it came that way, and that's unacceptable. Which, good for them, right? Like, they should be like that. So, you know, eights, to some extent, fear physical harm. Far more important, they fear being disempowered or controlled in some way. Eights are extraordinarily tough and can absorb a great deal of physical punishment without complaint. That is something that I read. I wonder how that could possibly be true about all eights everywhere. Like, you don't know every eight on the planet. Like, physical attributes, it's confusing me that somebody would say that about an eight. So, I don't know. If you understand that, or if that makes more sense to you, explain it to me. But, like, how can we know all eights everywhere are physically strong? We can say that often they make themselves physically strong because they know it's important. But to just say, like, oh, eights can withstand pain. Because the reality of the situation is probably only female eights can actually withstand pain, because, like, boys are all babies. Boys are like, oh no, I have a tickle in my throat. I better lay on the bed and cry for 6 days and make the woman in my life bring me everything and never say thank you. And women are literally like, I had a baby yesterday, but, like, I have work to do. Like, let's get going. Like, you know, money's not going to make itself. Like, it's just a big difference, right? Let's talk a little bit about an eight's childhood wounding. In childhood, eights felt ambivalent towards the nurturing figure in their home. They learned that they could find their place in the family system by taking on a complementary role to the nurturing role. Often a strong role, they decide to grow up quickly because they felt that by showing vulnerability or softness, they would be hurt, rejected, or betrayed. They became little protectors and showed an exterior of toughness and invulnerability. They became the one that others turned to for strength and guidance. They felt that if they lost their role in the family, that they would be rejected. Eights deal with issues of survival and strength. They believe that they must be strong, decisive, someone that can handle anything without flinching. They don't ever want to show any sign of weakness to any other human being, even to themselves, really. They become tough and aggressive and often hide their hurts, vulnerabilities, and feelings because it would be weak to show them. They are often assertive and adventurous children, which results in them getting punished frequently. In order to defend their psyche from the frequent punishment, they decide to take on a to hell with them kind of mindset and attitude. If they had an abusive childhood in some some way, they will live in constant anticipation of rejection and betrayal. If they had relatively nurturing childhood, they'd probably take on a strong protective role. The more they felt rejected, the more they will harden their hearts and become aggressive in response. You know, again, just to kind of wrap up, at their very best, eights are self-restrained, magnanimous, merciful, forbearing. They actually acknowledge higher authority, which is a big thing for an eight. They're courageous, but willing to put themselves in serious jeopardy to achieve their vision and have a lasting influence on the world. They may achieve true hero status and historical greatness. I mean, you heard the list. There's a lot of greatness on that list, and a gigantic orange man who's really just loud and has no intelligence to back it up. But again, we don't need to circle back on that. So let's talk about the nines. I don't mean to be going through this too quickly, but I do definitely want to make sure we have enough time to talk about the entirety of the Enneagram and really wrap it up. So let's talk about the Enneagram nines. I know a lot of nines in my life. Nines and twos are really very common in this world, and thank God for that, honestly. I think I have some nines in my life that I just genuinely, I can't say enough wonderful things about. So that said, let's hop in. Nines are known as the peacemakers. Nines are easygoing, self-effacing, receptive, reassuring, agreeable, and sometimes complacent. Nines are very trusting and also very stable forces in the world. They're usually very creative, optimistic, super supportive, but they can also be too willing to go along with others just for the sake of keeping the peace. They want everything to go smoothly and be without conflict, but they can also tend to be complacent and simplify problems and really minimize anything that's upsetting, you know, which again can be not so great. They typically have problems with inertia and stubbornness. At their best, though, indomitable and all-embracing, they are able to bring people together and heal conflict. So, you know, something that a nine always needs to kind of keep in mind is that avoiding a conflict is not the same thing as being without conflict, right? So you can only run for so long. And in the process of running, you can hurt the people around you because, you know, sometimes in relationships, we need you to step up. We need you to tell us what's wrong. We need you to get angry so that we understand, right? So the basic fear for a nine is loss and separation. The basic desire is to have inner stability and peace of mind. The wings for the nine are obviously an eight and a one. So we circle all the way back to ones. The key motivation for nines is that they want to create harmony in their environment, to avoid conflicts and tension, to preserve things as they are, to resist whatever would upset or disturb them. When moving in a kind of a stressful, unhealthy, you know, towards disintegration, complacent nines suddenly become anxious and worried, like sixes. But when they're healthy and they're moving in integration, a slothful, self-neglecting nine can become more self-developing and energetic, like healthy threes. So, you know, that's when we really start seeing them going after their goals, is when they can get themselves in a healthy state of mind and be ready to risk like that. Some great examples of nines would be Princess Grace of Monaco, Monet, Abraham Lincoln was a nine, Dwight Eisenhower, Ronald Reagan, Walt Disney, Mr. Rogers. Definitely a nine. Mr. Rogers is a great example of a nine. Some other fictional characters, I mean, Mr. Rogers was only so fictional, let's face it. Fanny Price from Mansfield Park, by the way, super underrated Mansfield Park. Go watch the Mansfield Park movie on Netflix. It's so good, but you should definitely read it. Please read it, but I'm just saying, if you don't want to read Mansfield Park, it is one of Jane Austen's best books. I know that Sense and Sensibility is a big one, but I only think that book is okay. Mansfield Park is dope. So, oh, and then Rue and Prim, both from The Hunger Games, were definitely some good examples. I do have written down examples from Harry Potter, but I feel like I'm only sharing Harry Potter. You know what? Never mind. Harry himself was definitely a nine. Remus Lupin was a nine. So I hope that definitely is some good examples for you guys. I mean, Harry Potter himself, let's talk about it. So nines are called the peacemakers because no type is more devoted to the quest for internal and external peace for themselves and for others. They are typically spiritual seekers who have a great yearning for connection with the cosmos as well as with other people. They work to maintain their peace of mind just as they work to establish peace and harmony in their world. The issues encountered in the nine are fundamental to all psychological and spiritual work. Being awake versus falling asleep to our true nature. Presence versus entrancement, openness versus blockage, tension versus relaxation, peace versus pain, union versus separation. Ironically, for a type so oriented to the spiritual world, nine is the center of the instinctive center and is the type that is potentially most grounded in the physical world and in their own bodies. The contradiction is resolved when we realize that nines are either in touch with their instinctive qualities and have tremendous elemental power and personal magnetism, or they're cut off from their instinctual strength and can be totally disengaged. Nines can kind of be all-encompassing, and some people call them the crown of the Enneagram. They are able to have the strength of eights, the sense of fun and adventure of sevens, the dutifulness of sixes, the intellectualism of fives, the creativity of fours, the attractiveness of threes, the generosity of twos, and the idealism of ones. However, what they generally do not have is a sense of really inhabiting themselves, a strong sense of their own unique identity. Honestly, for a type 9, just being their separate self, an individual who must assert themselves against others, can be really terrifying. They would rather melt into someone else than truly feel alone or, you know, follow their own idyllic daydreams. So, you know, nines demonstrate the universal temptation to ignore the disturbing aspects of life and seek some degree of peace and comfort by numbing out. They're the epitome of, you know, I have so much work to do and the world is in shambles, so I should watch another episode of The Office on Netflix and not think about it because it's stressful to think about. Which, again, who doesn't do that sometimes? Like, we all do that sometimes. Or, I don't know, maybe I just do. But I would like to think we all do that sometimes, but nines can really live there for far too long when they're not careful. They will do anything to keep the peace. And like I said before, and this is me speaking from a perspective of having so many nines in my life that I love or have loved, we need you to show up. Like, we need to hear you. We need to know, even if you disagree, even if it's going to cause more of a ruffle before things get better, even if it's hard to do or scary to do. Like, I guess what I really wanted to say is just, we need to hear you. We need your voice. And don't zone out just to keep the peace. And don't think that just agreeing with whatever I want to do is the way to keep peace, because that's not true. I want to do what you want to do, too. I want to know what you want. I want to know what you feel like the relationship is lacking. I want to know what I can do better to make you more happy and fulfilled. Like, your opinions matter. Your concerns, your doubts, your fears, they matter, and we want to hear them. And we're willing to stay in it with you. Just, like, show us what's going on and try to stay present even when it's hard. That's my little encouragement for nines. To emphasize the pleasant in life is not a bad thing. It's just limited, right? It's a limiting approach to life. Nines tend to always focus on the bright side of life so that their peace of mind won't be shaken. Sometimes, in a situation, the only way out is through. Let's talk about the childhood wound of a nine, which is the rejection of their voice. In childhood, nines felt connected to both parents. This can be good or bad, right? In a supportive family setting, nines can feel nurtured and supported, and in turn nurture and support others and themselves. But in a family where there was conflict or turmoil, they learned to, quote-unquote, tune out the problems and try to numb themselves to the conflict inside. Because nines are so tuned in to the emotions of their parental figures as children, they must keep those parental figures happy, or at least convince themselves that they're happy. Yet because no one can completely alter the moods of people around them, nines cope by numbing negative input and potentially living in denial. So you can kind of imagine a child who's a nine, like, putting on headphones and playing with their toys while their parents are fighting in the other room, right? They just imagine better times. They just make believe until the bad stuff goes away. You know, they as they develop and mature, nines can learn to let go of the idea that their participation in the world is unimportant. They can connect with themselves and give a voice to their feelings when they're healthy and when they're really seeking to. Even their anger, without feeling like it's going to cause the world to collapse, because it's not. Blow up and get angry at us, and then we'll still be here, and we'll pick up the pieces, and we'll figure it out together, and everything's going to be fine. But it's really hard for nines to feel safe in that, and even when they're really unhappy in a circumstance, in a situation, in a relationship, they'd rather not voice it. They'd rather just hope that it will change or go away. And you know, like I said, it's understandable, and to some extent, we all want to do that, but at the end of the day, in a relationship, it takes two people being present and being willing to work on it, right? So that's the Enneagram 9. And guys, we've wrapped up the Enneagram. I can't believe it. We talked about all the types, and you know what was so fun was getting different messages and texts from people throughout these last few weeks being like, oh my god, so-and-so is such a, you know, whatever number, and like just mutual friends and things like that. I've found that really fun. This has been a really, really fun series that I'm really excited about. So let me go ahead and give you some references for some of the research that I've done. First of all, I never want you guys to forget that I am essentially just Ask Jeeves, all right? Like, all I am doing is Googling stuff because I want you to learn it, and I know you don't have time to Google it, so I'm Googling it for you. So a lot of this I took right off of the Enneagram Institute's website because it is really, like, what I view as the hub of the Enneagram. It's just got so much in-depth information, and there were some of these that I almost just read entirely verbatim from the Enneagram Institute, and the EnneagramInstitute.com has, I'm sorry, there's no V, it's EnneagramInstitute.com, has so much more information. Additionally, I did go and look at PsychologyJunkie.com. They had a really cool article that went into depth about all the different childhood wounds for the various types. And one of my favorite sites of all times is BookRiot.com, and they did a really cool list of 99 fictional characters and what their types were, so that was really helpful for me to find some of these fictional characters to kind of give as examples, which, you know, again, I do think is really helpful. So so some great information there. And, you know, it really is a topic I love talking about, so I want to highly encourage you guys to reach out to me anytime you have questions or want to know more about it, because I love talking about it. I love answering questions. So just to name a few of the accounts on Instagram that I really love following, there is one called @XOEnneagram, and this one is not like funny memes as much as it is like really cool messages, like, you know, note to nines and things like that that are just really helpful and beneficial. So that's a fun one, and more of an educational one. There, and then one called @EnneagramAndMemes. Obviously, this is a meme account. It's actually run by a type 8. So, I mean, it's really good. It's really, really, really funny. So there's an account called Enneagram for the People that I find really funny. I follow one that's just called Enneagram 5, and I love it. It's run by a 5, obviously, and it's 4 fives, so it's, you know, pretty specific to that, but I really like it a lot. Let's see. Enneagram Vibes is a good one. And then there's one called @9TypesCo. So again, @9TypesCo, and really good, again, more of an educational one, but it's really cool and it's a lot of fun. So anyway, I just know that a lot of people are on Instagram, and it's a really great way to A, stay entertained, but also continue educating yourself on this topic. So don't ever count out social media. You just have to make sure, okay? Like, I wouldn't get my news from social media, ever, ever, ever. But I would see something that is news on social media and then go look it up myself to verify that it's true, and then I would get my news from social media, but that's really probably the extent of it for me.
Guys, I want to thank you again for allowing me to take 3 whole episodes on this. It's a fun, fun topic for me. So I'm really excited about the topic we have coming up, which I'm not going to tell you about, obviously, because I'm going to be posting clues on Instagram, again, at Faith Finds Out Podcast on Instagram. I'll be posting some clues leading up to next week, but I'm really excited. I will admit the research process for this one has been a little more arduous, but it's just because it's something that I'm teaching myself because I feel like I need to know and I do want to know, but I'm not having fun learning about it necessarily, but I'm going to make it fun for you. Don't worry. I'm having to read articles and stuff. You're going to hear my lovely, soothing voice and witty, witty banter. So you get the lucky part and it'll be fun for you. But for me, it's been a little bit of a journey, but it's okay because again, it's important. We need to know it. And it's also been really fascinating, honestly. Like I have enjoyed it. It's just been tricky. So anyway, I'm really excited about next week. I'm so excited with everything happening right now. I feel so creatively, I just feel like I'm grooving. And, you know, it's been a really cool and just a really exciting time in my life, honestly. I feel like I'm just now in a place where I have the capacity to go for all of these things, and it's just really exciting. So, fun times, great week. I hope everyone had a really good Labor Day. By the time this posts, Labor Day will be over. I hope I have a good Labor Day too. It is the future right now, but anyway, I hope you guys had a great Labor Day, nice and relaxing, and that it wasn't too hot. Hopefully it didn't rain. Thanks for hanging with me, as always. I'm looking forward so much to next week. I can't wait to hang out with you guys again. Please feel free to reach out to me on Instagram at Faith Finds Out Podcast or email me, faithfindsoutpodcast@gmail.com. Please subscribe, rate, review, send it to your friends. Have a great week, you guys. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Faith Finds Out. This is Faith Signs Out.